Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your host, Dakota Morgan, coming at you from Phoenix, Arizona. And right now, we have a very special guest on for this episode, Trevor Duvall. He's been in F is for Family. He's been in Star Wars stuff. He's been, most importantly, the reason why I got him on the show, but nonetheless, overall cool guy, Rocket Raccoon in the Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon. Fucking Trevor is an amazing man. He gives such good advice. We talk about moving to LA, about working in the film business, about motivation, dedication, all this sort of stuff. We talk about it today. We both give you guys some really cool advice. We both talk about the business itself. We talk about tackling big characters, fun behind the scenes on fun big projects and whatnot too. Overall, it's a really fun time. Trevor, you're welcome back anytime on the show. And make sure you guys at home, you guys share the show for the Comic Chronicle Podcast. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, comicchronicle.podbean.com. We're fucking everywhere. So you guys can go ahead and share it. Make sure you guys like, subscribe, leave a review and whatnot too. Make sure you share the show on whatever platform you want to, because it helps out greatly. We can bring more great people onto the show. And you know what? And give you guys the behind the scenes of everything, comics related and more. Thanks everyone for tuning in. And Trevor, take it away. Trevor, how are you doing, man?
I am all right.
That's good. We got everything all figured out and all that jazz and whatnot. But yeah, Trevor, I got to say, welcome to the Comic Chronicle Podcast, man. It's an absolute no problem. It's an honor to have you here. It really is. Like, you've done a lot of work. As I've went to school for voiceover and voice acting. Well, voice acting, really. I've went to school for, done a few roles, but you're like, I look at your resume and it's like, holy shit.
Yeah, I've done one or two things over the years.
Oh, just a little bit. Just a tad.
Just a tad.
And I'd want to say, too, man, is you've done a lot of nerdy stuff. Are you, like, a nerd as well sort of thing? Or are you just kind of, like, just been in, developed in the world sort of thing?
Define, what do you mean by that?
Like, you've done Marvel stuff. You've done, like, a bunch of video games. You've done a bunch of stuff. Like, are you a fan of most of the stuff that you do? Like, of the genres and basically that sort of thing?
I was never a huge comic book guy growing up. I mean, obviously, I was aware of it, but I never collected comics. Superheroes, to me, never really had, I didn't have a huge interest in them. I was more of a fantasy guy, like I grew up with Tolkien and stuff like that. So it's kind of ironic now that I'm, especially now, the past couple of years, I've been doing a ton of work with Marvel and, really getting involved in that world as well as on the writing side of things, so I have to throw myself into it. But no, I never was like, you know, I wasn't sure, you know, which group Wolverine belonged to, and I didn't know, you know, I was like, Professor X, is he a good guy? I don't know. Like, I didn't know.
Fair enough. I mean, but I think it's kind of the nice part about doing what we do, because as myself, I work in film too when not doing the show or writing comics. Is I'm able to go out and act and be able to be or work crew jobs, director or writing stuff. And I think it's the beauty of what we do is we're able to go into these worlds here and stuff we've never known about. Like, there's some paranormal stuff I got hooked on recently from a movie that I worked on. And so it's like, I never knew about this sort of thing. And then I'm able to go into this new world, play this part or something like that and get developed in this world and maybe become a fan, you know? Can you agree on that one?
Like, oh, yeah, for sure. There's so many shows that I have become involved with that I subsequently went, oh wow, this is really great. Case in point, when we did Lego Star Wars, that was a big deal for me because obviously I grew up with Star Wars, the originals. So to be able to come in as the Emperor was great. But like, I thought, okay, well, you know, this is probably gonna be okay. It'll be fine. But then I saw it, the first ones we did, the Yoda Chronicles, and I couldn't stop laughing because the writer, Mike Price, who's just a fantastic guy, he's a super fan as well. So he gets it. He understands why this is funny. Mm-hmm. And he'll throw in all these little Easter egg jokes in the script that only real Star Wars fans will get. So watching it, I'm like, oh man, that's so great to be a part of that, where half the jokes are, well,
you gotta be the fanboy. Let's be real here. If you're watching it, you're already the big fan who's gonna get the jokes.
In most cases,
I kind of want to go back with it, Trevor, because, you know, like, we can talk about all this work, which we'll get to, obviously, Rock Raccoon, all that jazz, we'll get to it, but, like, I kind of want to go back in time, because I like to hear people's origin stories, you know, it's always kind of good to see where we start. Now, acting and work, being a filmmaker and all this jazz, where did it start, man? Like, what happened? What was that thing to be, like, the chrysalis of, I want to make stuff and do it and go through the hardships of acting, but still want to do it?
Yeah, I guess it was the night that the meteor struck down outside my farm. There was a strange glow. I went to it, and I got too close, and next thing I knew, I was Super Voice Guy. No, I was on stage since I was since I was a little kid, doing theater. Nothing professional or anything until much later. And I went up the ranks. You know, I was training in theater, and I was doing voices and accents since I was very young, just as fun, you know, giving voices to action figures and stuff like that, as I would play in the living room and all that stuff as a kid. But when I got to high school, I sort of fell in pretty seriously with acting in terms of theatrical performance. Then I went to university, and I became a director, became a theater director there, and then I became a filmmaker. And all the while, the voice thing, it was never really a career option where I grew up. I didn't even know it was a career option. It didn't even occur to me. They were just things I did for fun. And then I moved to Vancouver in 98, and there was where I fell into the voice world, because there was a voice world to fall into, and for one thing, and just because I'd been sort of practicing it my whole life, it was a very easy and natural fit for me. So I sort of auditioned for my first job, booked it, and never looked back. So that's the extreme short version of the story.
Yeah, that's like the here's everything combined in synopsis is for you,
yes,
sort of thing.
Yes.
Where did you grow up though, man? Like, where was it? Because I know the feeling all too well of not growing up with like the business in there. I may be in Phoenix and there's somewhat of one here, but Illinois, I never had one. Where did you kind of grow up a little bit before?
I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada, which is in the prairies. So it's a sizable city, but it's not. I mean, and it was really known for its theater community. Like, it has the biggest fringe festival in the world, second only to Edinburgh, Scotland.
That's true.
So it's a huge, huge, huge theater town. Calgary as well, which is a city to the south. But not really film, TV, certainly not voiceover stuff. The only voice stuff you would do in Edmonton is, like, the occasional radio commercial. So, but I because theater was such a focus, that's what I started doing. But yeah, the voices and the accents and things, which have been a huge help to me here in LA since I've been here, because it turns out that not a lot of people have the accent range that I do, which is, you know, a pleasant surprise. Yeah. But for me, anyway. But yeah, no, it was easy to get involved in theater back in Edmonton because there was a lot of support for that, but not for anything else. Like, when we became, me and my ex-business partner, Clinton, when we decided to start this film company, there was no resources for that at all. Like, we had to really struggle, which is what precipitated me going to Vancouver, because in those days, Vancouver was like Hollywood North for sure. There was a million things going on. There was way more support for independent film and stuff. So I was like, well, that's where I gotta go. And literally within 3 weeks, I'd fallen into the voice world. So it was a pretty fairly quick transition, at least understanding that there was such thing as a voice world, which was new to me, right?
Yeah, it's like you move and you're like, okay, we're gonna go in, I'm chasing the dreams, we're going to Vancouver. You get there and you're like, I fucking came to Narnia.
Yeah, and in a way, like that's the thing, man. Like, I didn't go to Vancouver to pursue voice. Like I said, I didn't even know it was an option. So just by putting myself in the bigger community and the bigger market, I realized, look at all this stuff that's available for me to do that I didn't realize. And it happened again in 2013 when I moved here to Los Angeles. And I kind of knew it would happen this time because I'd already been through it. But to come here and all of a sudden all these other opportunities opened up that I wouldn't have. Like, I'm writing for Marvel. Like, that would never have crossed my mind as some theater student in Edmonton. Like, it would never, you know. So the bigger communities, the bigger markets, they've got way more opportunities that you don't even know are there necessarily until you are there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Which ties to the fact of, I tell people this all the damn time, is, you know, chase your dreams, go for it, take the leap, because you never know what's going to come. And that 100% right there is the truth of that, because you're like, you never know what's here. You do not know. Like, I went and just started doing a podcast just for fun before, and then now on a big-time network. Now doing all this big stuff here and, you know, meeting people like you and all this sort of jazz. Like, you never know what's going to take you. And actually, I'm now a comic book writer because of this damn show. Because I got hired on for a company for, like, two books. Let me tell you, that's fucking stress. But
Yeah, and it happens these days more and more because of the internet, because of social media. People, you know, independent producers and independent creators can have their stuff found far more easily than it was in the old days. You know, in the old days, there was the whole gatekeeper thing where you had to go through proper channels, and you still do to an extent.
Yeah.
But I mean, the idea that you could do a podcast and get noticed by somebody fairly major and then get employed from that was unheard of when I was your age, and I was growing up.
Back when in the old days, you see.
When the earth was cooling, yeah.
Yeah, when the air was more cooler, or much more cooler. Much less earthquakes. Speaking of what you said here in L.A., I gotta ask, I know you've probably been asked by a billion damn people, how was the earthquake? Did you feel anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was couch surfing for real.
Oh, shit.
Because it wasn't like, I've been in earthquakes before where it was shaking. This wasn't shaking. This was like being on the ocean. This was like everything was rippling. Yeah, it was, and you know, I'm sitting in my house and all of a sudden the wine glasses and the bars that are hanging up start to clink, and I'm like, what? And then you see and you feel the whole, like the walls, everything rippling. It's terrifying, especially considering I own the house. It's very concerning to me.
But
it was scary. And then like, 12 hours later, 24, whatever, very shortly after that, we had another one that was even bigger. So it was like, okay, let's make sure the emergency supplies are all topped up and all that stuff. But it's not fun. It's not fun.
No, was there anybody in the house with you, or?
Yeah, my girlfriend was with me, and we both knew right away. But you know, ironically, we're sitting here panicking, and the dog's just like, huh? What are you guys worried about? Dog doesn't even, you know. And yet, someone can walk by the house and breathe, and she'll lose her mind. Oh my God!
Yeah.
But the whole earth is in rebellion, and she's like, meh, whatever.
Which is the opposite, because usually dogs, like right before an earthquake or tornado or something like that, and they're like, holy shit, we're gonna die.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my dog's a sociopath. So
yeah, fair enough. It's like, I bet you the dog was thinking, I'm gonna watch. I'm gonna watch and see what happens to you guys.
Yeah, totally. My dog has no knowledge of, like, no interest in, you know, seismic events. Has no interest. If we're upset about something, you know, there's been some emotions, and she doesn't care. She's like, ball, food, that's all I want. You know, she's a sociopath.
Fair enough. I got one earthquake. So I've never told this on the show or anything like that before. Before you got everything, like, there was in Illinois, I was like 11 or 12, and we felt an earthquake. And you got to imagine being a teenager in Illinois, you're like, an earthquake? Oh, we just got bombed or something. Like, what happened?
No kidding.
And so, like,
I didn't think earthquakes were possible in Illinois.
Neither did we. And it was like, this probably about 10 or 11 years, I don't know, 12 years ago now. And we felt it was like an aftermath, like a ripple from another one somewhere. I don't even remember where. It's really crazy and weird. I had a bunk bed, and my bunk bed was shaking really heavy. Like, I woke up, I'm like, what the hell? And it shook, and I, like, shook. And then I get down, and I, like, hear these doors. I'm like, little kid me immediately thought was like, oh, we're going to get robbed. This is when the riots happened. I've seen the movies. They're going to come in and kill me. Like, they're going to steal my stuff. Like, I'm like, oh my God, my TV, my Xbox, oh my God. And so I hear something going on, and I hear like doors opening in my house. And my mom luckily forgave me for this, because I grab my remote, and I'm about ready. This person's opening my door. I think it's a mugger or something like that, someone, this looter. And I grab my remote, and I charge and jump, and I find out it was my mom. And I just almost started wailing out of like, you ain't taking my stuff.
Oh boy.
It was like, and I felt so bad. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do all my chores for an entire week. And she's like, you almost murdered me. I'm like, I know, but I stopped midway. Because I didn't hit her or anything, full disclosure, but it was one of those. She had like, son thought I was a looter. I need a drink.
Wow.
Yeah, so you never know what can happen in an earthquake.
Yeah, it's true. It's madness.
Yeah, it's crazy. And kind of getting back to it, man, is I got to ask, LA or Vancouver, which was more fun to work in, like, the film business in? Which one do you think? Like, I know LA's got, like you said, more opportunities and stuff like that, but I find a war. People are like, oh, no, LA sucks. Vancouver's the best. Or, no, Vancouver sucks. LA's the best.
No. I would never describe either of them like that. They were both really, really great but for totally different reasons. Vancouver, I was there for 15 years, so I have a lot of very, very, very close friends there still, and I love to get up there when I can. Vancouver was about a lifestyle. It was about, like, being able to get on my bike and ride around the seawall every day and just, you know, hike the mountains and go down to the beach. And it was a real, real sort of granola lifestyle in a way, you know. But it was awesome. And in terms of the business, it worked for me very well because it was a very, very small community up there. I think sort of in my Vancouver prime, there was maybe like 30 of us that did everything. Ooh. So it was a case of once you get in the door, you're good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was easy to, once you started working, it was easy to keep working. Whereas L.A. is a different ballgame. L.A. is obviously way more people doing it, way more people trying to do it, but also way more opportunities and way more higher profile kind of jobs. And in fact, that was one of the main reasons why I moved, because mm-hmm. I wanted to get involved in higher profile jobs. So I used to say that Vancouver was the place where we do every cartoon you've never heard of. Because most of the time, the work that we did were on shows that kind of vanished after a season or two and never really caught on. Now, it wasn't always the case. My Little Pony is an example of one that kind of caught on just a little bit.
Oh, just a wee bit.
Just a wee bit. But most shows, that was an anomaly. Most shows, you never heard of them again. So consequently, mm-hmm. my example was if I'm on a plane and I get in a conversation with somebody beside me and they say the inevitable question, what do you do? And I tell them, well, I do cartoon voices. Oh my God, which ones? And I tell them and their mind goes blank or their faces go blank. I wanted to be able to say, no, I'm on this show. And they go, oh yeah, I know that show. And that is what I get here. Because a lot of the shows I do here are much higher in profile. So it's a different ballgame here in many, many ways. But honestly, the best part is that the community of voice actors are pretty much exactly the same in terms of what kind of people they are. They're just super, super cool, really, really accepting, really welcoming, super talented, very few ego problems. So it's a real joy to work in the VO community here or in Vancouver, honestly. I had a fear of that when I moved to Hollywood. Oh no, I was going to be surrounded by a bunch of douchebags. But in the voice world, it's not that. People are just too laid back for it. So it was a great relief.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's got to be. And voiceover is always that family, you know? Like voice acting, you always are in that family. Once you're in, and you went from one to the other. So that's definitely like, he's a foreign exchange. He's like the family, like cousin from the West Coast or something like that.
That's funny. I mean, I got not teased, but it was remarked upon a lot about who's this Canadian guy coming taking our jobs, right? But they were. I mean, one of the first big shows I did was Guardians of the Galaxy, and I remember sitting down with Will Friedle, who I didn't know who he was at the time because I never watched Boy Meets World, so I didn't know he was some big superstar TV guy. Kevin Michael Richardson, who of course is a voice god, a legend.
Yeah.
You know, David Sobolov, Vanessa Marshall, again, she's been on everything. So, James Arnold Taylor, my good friend from Johnny Test, was on that show. So it was kind of the perfect way to be introduced to the LA community because these people were all super pro, but just really, really, really welcoming. Really, they made you feel part of the family immediately. And that it couldn't have been better. It couldn't have been a better introduction to the LA scene.
I think that, man, that's a good LA story. And as a guy who's debating whether or not to move out there in his film career at the moment, that's really good to hear. And it's good to hear, like, because automatically when people think, oh, went to LA, life must have been terrible and it must have been absolute hell. Like, no, not always.
That's the thing. I mean, that's a common trope. It's a common stereotype. Yeah. In fact, there was a couple of years after I moved here, I would still go back to Vancouver quite a bit in the early days for work. I would run into other actors, not like the core voice people, but like, you know, sort of what I call the peripheral voice people. So these are actors who either do like film and TV predominantly or stage work predominantly, but occasionally they do voice. So I knew them that way, but they weren't like the core voice people. So I would go up there and I would run into these people and they'd always do the same thing. They'd say, oh, so did I hear that you're in LA now? I'd go, yeah. And they would always have the same thing. They would always look at me and they'd go, so how's it going? With this look of like disdain and fear, like they didn't want to ask the question because they were afraid of the inevitable, well, you know, it's pretty tough out there, man. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to come back. Yeah. Because that's the common story. Most people come down here and don't have what you would consider a successful experience.
Hey, ladies and gents, this is Dakota coming at you with a little bit of an ad break right now because we have good news for you. Do you guys have an ad for a product, an event, or are you an actor trying to get your way out there in the world, or actress? Who knows? Whatever it may be, you guys can have it in the show. That's right. We're now doing ads. Do you guys want to have one in the show? I know it may seem something bad, but we're here to help you guys. They'll promote you and whatnot too, and to help you give you guys escape into the world. But we want to help out our community and help out our fan base. So for just $10 a month, you guys can have your own little ad of your choice, and we'll have it promoted on the show. You can either record it and send it to us, or we'll record one for you with all the information. That's right, folks. For just $10 a month, you guys can have your ad in the show. How do you do it? Well, just email filmworld97@gmail.com. That's filmworld97@gmail.com for all the details and payment and figuring out what it is and whatnot that you guys want to do. Of course, I'm not going to be doing things that are racist or anything like that. That's not what the show is. So, thank you guys for tuning in, and we're going to get right back to the show. But remember, filmworld, F-I-L-M, world97@gmail.com, and we'll go figure it out from there. You guys can be on the show. Think about it. Alrighty, now, back to the episode.
Because it's a numbers game. So yeah. Most people are going to come here and most people are going to, quote unquote, fail, right? So, which is why it's even more important to come down here with the right attitude, which is the same attitude that I went to Vancouver with back in 98. And that attitude was this: I will not take a job outside my business because I can dig ditches back home. So the idea was, when I got there, in Vancouver's case, I was not going to take any job that didn't have at least some peripheral connection to the business. So consequently, the first job I had in Vancouver was working in the office for my agent, which turned out to be the best possible thing I could have done because I learned more about how the industry works in those couple years than I would have in any other set of circumstances. And the same thing was here in LA. I knew. I was like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen when I go down there. I have no reason to expect that I'm going to work at all. Yes, I'm talented. Yes, I believe in myself, blah, 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 blah. But I had no expectation. I was like, I'm going to go down there for a year. I'll hang around. I'll meet some people. I'll do a Disney Princess show guest spot, maybe a couple of radio spots, and then that'll be it. I'll turn around, I'll go home, I'll get back to my life. That was honestly my expectation of Los Angeles. I was like, then I can say, yeah, I lived in LA, and get on with my life in Vancouver. That was what I was willing to do. But I was also understanding that by going down there, I had to keep an open mind, and I had to never take a job outside my business. I didn't have to worry about that when I came here because I was pretty well off, so I didn't really have to worry about money and stuff like I did when I came to Van. But I knew that I wasn't going to do anything that was going to be outside my purview of working in the industry. But that said, I had to keep my options open. I had to be willing to allow new experiences to come to me, which it did, right? With the whole writing thing, that sort of fell in my lap because of a set of circumstances. But that would have only happened if I was open to it, you know? So you have to come down here with the idea that yes, you have to work hard. Yes, you have to persevere. But I honestly believe, and I used to teach a lot, and I used to teach this very thing, that if you have a backup plan, you're going to use it. Yeah. So my personal philosophy has always been a very dangerous one, which is no plan B. You damn the torpedoes. You're going all in.
It's true. You know what I mean? Huh? Yeah, it's 100% true. I hear that a lot. Well, I hear it a lot from people who know what the fuck they're talking about. Like, I gotta clarify that. And I was like, you do, like, that advice to anybody listening right now who's in the same boat or in the boats of, like, of working as a creative and whatnot and thinking about doing LA and all that jazz and just in life in general, yeah, plan B, you're dead. Like, if you, the one I was told that's very similar, it's basically the same thing, is if you create plan B, you've already failed.
Exactly. Now, that doesn't mean that doesn't mean you go in unprepared, right?
No.
Like, you have to, like I said, when I came down here, I had enough money in the bank to float me for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm good. I can take 2 years and not work another day, and I'll be fine. Most people don't do that. Most people can't do that. Like, a lot of people that come here tend to be much younger, and they tend not to have established themselves in anything. You got to remember, when I came here, I was 40 years old, and I'd been working for 15 years. So I had a career when I came down here. I wasn't some spring chicken off the farm, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They thought I was, because they'd never heard of me before. That's
true. He's a newbie. But, like,
yeah, no! But I'd been doing this for 15 years when I came down here, so I was prepared. one of the first agents I spoke to when I came down here, one of the first things he said to me was, "Do you have any money?" I was like, "What do you need a loan?" He's like, "No, it's just that most people come down here with enough money for about 6 months. They assume they're going to make it, and then they don't, and mm-hmm. then they're broke, and then they got to go home." And I'm like, "I'll be okay." But, you know, I understand his question now, because you have to be prepared. You can't rely on a plan B, because you're right, that'll sink you. But if you're unprepared for plan A, you're fucked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you gotta at least get A down before you get B down, you know?
Yeah. But that's a very dangerous advice, and most reasonable sort of parents of young people would tell them, "Oh, no, you can't do that. You have to have a backup plan."
Yeah.
Because they don't want their children to, you know, go through horrible things or whatever. But the fact is, I'll tell you, man, every actor I've known in my long years of doing this, every actor who I've known who is successful at this is successful because they damned the torpedoes, because they did not plan. They didn't have a plan B. They didn't have a backup. And conversely, every actor I've known who has, quote unquote, failed, it's because they relied on their backup plan. So many times you see it. So many times you see it where actors come down here or to Vancouver or whatever, and they don't have a ton of money, and they got to get their day job. Well, yeah, because we all got to pay rent. Yeah. We all got to eat. Yeah. That's necessary. But the day job becomes your anchor around which your career begins to spin, and it's got to be the other way around. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of jobs allow that. You know, not a lot of jobs afford that kind of flexibility, which is why a lot of actors wind up being waiters, because of the flexible hours, flexible schedule, stuff like that. Anyway, I'm going on and on about this, but
it's honestly, you can say you're going on and on, but honestly, it's really good advice. It's really good inspirational, motivational stuff to hear, because as a person coming from your case, like someone who's just like, "Oh, la-di-la, Mary Jane on the road," you know, they'll tell you all this sort of thing. You're like, whatever. But then you someone like from your position of things, who's made it work, you know, who's got the experience and everything underneath their belt, and is always learning, always doing all this jazz, and trying to help others, and like, "Hey, here's my advice to you guys." Like, that's the advice you got to listen to. And I think there's a lot of people who listen to the show, a couple of thousands of people that listen to the show, they try to get a work in film. We have a lot of film workers who listen to the show, a lot of people who are working comics, that sort of thing too, that want to go out and move to different places. So, no, it's really helpful shit. I mean, even to me myself, it's really helpful shit, man. So you're not going out on that. Trust me, you're good.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's any attempt to make a living in this business is fraught with all kinds of difficulties that a lot of other industries don't necessarily share.
Yeah.
Comedians, I know a lot of stand-ups, and I wouldn't want their life for any amount of money, because I'm talking about the working comics now. I'm talking about the guys playing the road houses, these guys on the road all the time, because that's the reality for most comics. You want to be a working comic, you're on the road all the fucking time.
Oh, yeah.
Some guys get off on that, and some guys become sort of addicted to that, and all the power to them. It's not for me. There was a time when I was very much being encouraged to go the stand-up route, actually, and I saw that lifestyle, and I went, new thanks. No.
Yeah, it's rough. So
but the thing is about these guys is that they know they're good, right? Like, the thing is, one of my favorite comedians in the world, he's a friend of mine from back home, Dylan Reimer is his name. He's fantastic. He's one of the smartest guys I know. He's also one of the hardest working comics I know. But he is always on the road. Always playing these fucking shit gigs in, you know, middle of nowhere, Nebraska or whatever. Yeah. He's always on the road. But he's so good, and I look at that and I think, you know, the guy doesn't have two nickels to rub together most of the time. So why does he keep doing this? Well, we know why. He's doing it because he can't not. And that's the thing that in any sort of performing art, you have to have. You've got to have that thing that says, I will die inside if I don't do this. You know what I mean? Like, people say to me, they say, when are you going to retire? And that I don't even know what that word means, retire. I want to drop dead in a recording studio when I'm 90. You know what I mean?
Like, yes, yeah.
The notion of why would you stop doing that which fulfills you so greatly? So anyway, my point about people who listen to your show, people who are, you know, in the business and stuff, one of the key things about trying to make it in the business is that you got to know that you have something to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
I think so many people get involved in show business for all the wrong reasons. It's not because they feel a passion that they can contribute something, but rather they get swept up in ideas of fame or fortune or all that nonsense. I have a saying that I firmly stand by, and that is the difference between an amateur and professional. An amateur says, what can I get out of this situation? What can I get out of this gig, right? Mm-hmm. A professional says, what can I give to it? What can I contribute to it? That's the difference. Because a pro understands that they are there as part of a team. Part of a team. That they are there to contribute their skills, their gifts, their art, to create something bigger than themselves. Yeah. And I'm talking even silly little cartoons that we do. It's the same thing. Everybody's got a role, and everybody's there to contribute to something that is greater than themselves. And a lot of people don't really grasp that. And those are the people that are doomed to failure.
Yeah.
Because they think it's all about them. They think it's all about their own ego and their own stuff. And that's death, man. Because in the end of the day, no matter what your position is, you could be a fucking – you could be a gaffer on set, or you could be a voice actor in a studio, or you could be the lead actor in a big Hollywood budget film. We're all just pieces of that machine. We're all pieces of that puzzle. And we've all got to work together to make it happen. And this sounds all, you know, communist Marxist paradise.
No! Well, there's some people from, like, the 60s maybe listening to the show. They're like, he's a commie! No, yeah, he's not!
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, that's not what I mean at all. I just mean that you have to... You have to be part of a team if you work in the business, and you have to know that your contribution is good.
Yeah.
A lot of people come here, a lot of people came to Vancouver with this expectation they're going to do well, but they've never really tested their own abilities. And it's heartbreaking to see these young people who come, and they really, really want to be, let's say, a voice guy or voice gal, you know, but they're no good. They're no good. They can't read, or they can't speak, or they can't, you know, they can't break themselves out of a particular rhythm, or they can't take direction, whatever. There's a million things. But the that's heartbreaking to me, because these people have such a passion for it, but they're just no good. And sometimes you can sort of learn to break down those things, but a lot of the times the hard truth of the matter is you kind of either born with it or you're not.
Yeah.
And that's not something a lot of people want to hear. But it's kind of the truth, you know?
Yeah, it's you really, especially with voice acting, you really have to be, because it is in that same sense, you can't see yourself doing anything else, because a lot of times it's your feeling, it's your inner gut. Like, you have to have that certain mentality. You have to have that certain direction. You have to have that certain talent with it too. And, you know, a lot of things you can, like, for film crew behind the scenes, whatnot, I work a lot into, you see a lot of that, like, you can get trained to do it and you come really good and shit like that. But for voice acting, I've had a few people on from before who've worked for Marvel, DC, all this stuff, done countless video games and shit and anime, and they see the same damn thing. You gotta be really born with this, because if you're not and you try to get into it, maybe you could, but it's a royal pain in the ass, and it's a lot of hard uphill battles, and to train yourself and do it, that's going to take many, 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 many years, because if not, you're just going to be born for it. So I mean,
yeah,
you really got to work.
It's not like it's impossible to learn how to do it. It's just that if you're, I mean, think about it. If you're a director, you're a producer, and you're casting, I don't know, a video game, and you've got your choice, there's two guys that audition, let's say, okay? They both have the right timbre, pitch. They're both in the right sort of placement for the character voice, you think, okay? Mm. And you know that one of them is someone who's been doing this for 20 years, and you've worked with them 10, 15 times, and they're quick, they're good, they're professional, they're fun, they get the job done right on time or early, they don't mess around, but they, you know, they tell jokes, whatever, they're just fun to work with, they're good, solid pros.
Yeah.
Or someone who you're pretty sure that they'd get it, but you're going to have to spend an extra couple of hours every session in order to really direct them into a particular... Who are you going to cast? It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true. Hey, fellow comic book fans, this is Dakota coming at you guys a little bit of a break, but telling you about Young Power, the book I'm writing based on my childhood ideas of teenage rebellion meets Star Wars. That's what happens, folks, when there's... It's so crazy, you're gonna have to read it. High-tech teens in their own little world try to invade Earth. Or do they? Who knows? Maybe there's a rebellion, maybe there's not. Go read it for your guys' self. It's a digital comic, Young Power, for SGGS Comics. You can follow them at SGGS Comics on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And you can follow me, where I show off the book as well, on Instagram, at Dakota_Morgan97. The book issue one has dropped already, and people have loved it all over the world. It's been given many, many reviews, many, many shares and whatnot. It's a digital comic for the first time, for the first few issues, but expect more to come later down the road. So if you guys want to read my comic book and help out, and so I can give you guys some more fun stuff along the way too, go check out Yun Power on Instagram for at SGGS Comics or at Dakota_Morgan97. And expect much more, maybe some print copies, who knows, along the way too. So thank everyone for checking it out. And now, back to the show.
So, you know, that's why it's harder for people who don't have a natural affinity for this to sort of break in. Because the fact is, time is money. And these producers and directors, you know, they want to get the job done quickly and efficiently with the best possible quality at the end. Yeah. And you just got to be good, you know?
It's true. Yeah, it's you're not wrong in the slightest. I mean, out in Arizona right now, in the film world out here, we run into the same damn thing, and we get these like actors and that, and they're like, oh, we're number one and shit like that, and it's like, no, and they're like, I can't get anything. It's like, it's because, you know, maybe you're just not really bred for it or anything like that, or, you know, maybe the drive's not there. But it's like, you can be not good, but you can be good. You just got to find that drive sometimes, which I think is important for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, in the performing arts world, and this we've heard this cliche a million times, but it's the truth, is that we're met with rejection every single day. I mean, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 auditions a day sometimes. And I know that I'm going to probably book none of those. But that's okay. You just keep going. You just keep going.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could do 30, 40, 50 auditions in a week. And if I get one of them, oh my God, how did that happen? How did anybody book anything? It's crazy. It's crazy that they, out of thousands of people, decided to pick me. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, so you're surrounded by rejection all the time. So if you come into this industry with a sense of entitlement, with a sense of, well, I've been told that I'm really good by my drama teacher in high school or whatever, you know, you're going to be in for disappointment unless you get really lucky. And if you get really lucky, maybe you're on Easy Street, but you'll probably still be a dick because you won't have any, you know, you won't have any appreciation of what it means to go through the trenches. And no one likes to work with the dick. No. It's just the way it's true.
Yeah, it's like, sorry, like I know, it's really one of those of I've seen it countless times here, and you've probably seen it countless times too. Someone's being it, so the dick comes on set, and it's like, or in the recording booth or anything like that. I've seen it everywhere, and then, you know, they're like, they're gone. Like, what happened to this person? Oh, they sucked. It's like, listen,
and,
they're gone.
The frustrating thing is when there's a dick person who comes in and they're good. That's the worst.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a handful of examples. Thank God it's only a handful. I could count them on one hand of people who I've worked with over the years in both cities that are people who are immensely talented, but I just cannot even look them in the eye because I think they're just rotten people. I think they're rotten human beings.
Oh.
But that is so rare. That is so rare in the voice world. It is so, so, so rare. But there are examples of it. And I have a hard time with those people because I'm like, I don't want to be in a booth with you. I don't want to work with you. I have no choice sometimes, right? I have to.
Mm.
But I'm not gonna play your game. I'm not even gonna look in the eye because I think you're just a rotten human being, you know. But that's very rare. That's extraordinarily rare. I suspect that's a lot more rare in the on-camera world. Oh, I'm sorry, a lot more common in the on-camera world than it is in the voice world.
It is 100%. I do a lot more on-camera stuff, it's acting or crew stuff, and it is way a lot more than voice acting, sadly. I wish that could change, but and you see it a lot more on camera. And I gotta ask this of you though, Trevor, is of course the folks at home I'll ask about Rock Raccoon and all that shit, but I gotta ask, it's like you seem really like a really cool guy, and you have like your head on straight, you seem you know what you're doing, you know what you're talking about, you enjoy what you do and shit like that. And I gotta ask, like, Trevor, what's the motive, what's the drive for you, like, most of the days and whatnot? Is it a thing from childhood or something like that? Like, what's the drive to keep you going, you know?
I have been doing it since I was a kid, so that's kind of part. Like, playing these characters is just so second nature to me that I can't imagine not doing it. I can't imagine, you know, not breaking out in some accent or character voice or something just because it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but honestly, like, I get so excited when I get cast in something. And it's not just because, oh, great, a job, right? Because that's always good.
Yeah,
job's
it's true.
Good.
Money, yes, good.
You know, money's good. Pay the mortgage, all that stuff is good. But it's a sense of acceptance. It's a sense of, oh, I'm good enough. I'm good enough to play in a big league, Dad. Right? It's that, which is, you know, kind of pathetic. But it's true. It's true that we all have that sort of need to please. That's part of the reason why we do this, let's face it. But it's also knowing that I'm going to be brought into a little family for a while, and that family is going to be very tight for as long as it lasts. Like, I'm on the new Thundercats show.
Yes.
And that's a great, great, great little family. And so when I got cast in that, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool because these people are really lots of fun. And so part of the excitement for me is like, that is my family. Those are the people who I consider, you know, my brothers and sisters, my brothers and sisters in the force world, my brothers and sisters. Yeah. But they are. They're my, I'll be a temporary, but they're my family. And those bonds are as strong and tight to me as my real familial bonds. So I can't imagine a world in which I said, you know what? I'm good. I'm not going to do voiceover anymore. I can't even conceive. That's like saying, you know what? I'm not going to breathe oxygen anymore. I'm good. Yeah. It's only a poisonous mixture of methane and carbon dioxide for me from now on. Like, it's just, it's impossible. I would die. I would suffocate and die. So the drive to do it every day. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. Auditioning is a goddamn chore.
100%.
It's a horrible chore.
It's terrible.
Back in Van, you know, most of the auditions we did, we got to go into the studio.
I hate that.
And that was great.
Well,
no,
you like
because,
it?
Yeah, because when you go into the studio, that most of the time, that's the only time you see half these people
work
with. Yeah. So that was the social time for us to go, hey, I got an audition, going to go down to Coco and see, oh, there's Sam, oh, there's Brian Drummond, there's the Dobson boys, whatever. And you're, you know, you're laughing and joking. And at that point, it doesn't matter who, you're all going out for the same role. Doesn't matter. Nobody cares. One of you is going to get it, and then there'll be another job for the other guy later. You know what I mean? Like, it was this sense of, it's okay, it's fine. But that was a real social thing. I love that. But now, everything's done from my home studio, where I am now. And as soon as this interview's over, I gotta go into my booth and I gotta crack off a bunch of stuff, and that's a giant chore because it's just me in there alone, blowing my own horn. Lame.
Yeah, you're like,
so I vastly prefer the old days back home when you would go into studios, but that's so rare. It's so rare anymore.
It seems like more positive light, man. Like, that's, by the way, I'll touch on it though. That drive, perfect. Like, I relate 100% to that drive, and so are many other people. And it's beautiful, man. But I gotta say too, is it seems like a good time back then for auditions and going in like with other people and whatnot. Because I try, when I go on auditions here, in person auditions, I say I hate it because here I'm the guy who's like, hey folks, what's up? How's it going? Like, oh, you got the same part? Like, you a little bit like, oh, cool, me too. Like, hey, what you bringing to it? Oh, I'm bringing this to it. Like, oh, I'm bringing this to it. Like, oh, and bounce off each other and shit. I try being that guy who's like talking to people and whatnot, and like having a good time and whatnot because we're here because we want to be and shit. But it's awesome. A lot of times auditions here, I'm not going to lie to you, it feels like I'm like in line to go to prison. And it's like everyone's dark and sad and depressing. It's like, what the hell?
So let me ask you this. Are you talking about on camera auditions?
On camera, yes.
Yes. So that is a very different animal.
Yeah.
The things I'm talking about are voice auditions.
Just voice? So, okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes. On camera auditions, the few that I did, hated them, hated with a fiery, hellish passion. Did I hate doing auditions? Hated it. In fact, the whole on-camera world, I had a big chip on my shoulder about the whole on-camera world for a long time because I was like, so my ability means nothing. All that matters is, am I TV pretty? Am I TV beautiful?
Yeah.
That's all you fucking people care about in the end, right?
Yeah.
Well, to hell with you, because in the voiceover world, obviously, only your ability is what counts. It doesn't matter what you look like. It's irrelevant, you know? And I firmly believe in that. I firmly believe that to the best person for the job goes the role. And that's not the case in the on-cam world because you're being judged by all of these superficial things all the time, all the time, all the time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the auditions I did for on-camera were typically miserable affairs. And, you know, you had to put a gun to my head to do it. When I came down here, people said, oh, you should get involved in on-camera. Because it was an on-camera job that got me to L.A. in the first place, which is a bizarre set of circumstances.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
But when I was here, people said, oh, well, now you can do sitcoms and stuff. And I'm like, I'll do it if they offer me a job, but I'm not doing a fucking audition. Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, you're like, no.
No way. I'm not starting at the bottom again. I'm not waiting in a room full of 50 other people going out for the same three-line job. Are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
No way. It's funny. I was at an audition, a rare in-person voiceover audition in Hollywood not so long ago, and I was sitting beside John DiMaggio.
Ooh.
And we were both sitting there like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? We're sitting here with all of these other people who, there was a lot of people from film and TV that were coming out for this thing because it was a big commercial thing. We were like the only two like voice guys there. And we were just sitting there going, oh my God, what are we doing here? This is so ridiculous. This is so ridiculous that we're sitting here and we're seeing all of these other on-camera people and they're really, you know, they're really getting into it and they're rehearsing. And I'm like, God, just really?
Yeah, you're like, listen.
Do it, man.
That's insane. This is one of those of like, why? This is pointless. Like, here, I can go outside, send it, I'll record on my phone, and then send it to you. Is that better?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I think that's the reason why I was shortlisted and Johnny booked it.
Yeah. You're like, oh, man, this is stupid. And he's like, I got to keep up.
Yeah.
A little bit ago, I did this. Every now and then, I get the opportunities to do voice acting auditions. And there was one that I was so nervous on, man. And have you ever got the like the ones where you're really scared? Like you're like, oh God, like it's a big thing and you're like, you don't want to really fuck it up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to fuck up anything, but I think I don't tend to really place a lot of importance on that stuff. I tend to just go in, fire and forget. Do it, fire, forget, walk away. But that said, there are things that I really, really, really wanted to get. And one of those was Emperor Palpatine in Lego Star Wars.
Yeah.
That was a huge deal for me when I read for him. I was like, oh, I really want this job. I really want to be the Emperor. And I got it, and it was great. But yeah, I was a little nervous. Not so much in the middle of the audition, but after I walked away. That's when I got nervous, because I was like, did I do everything I could have? Did I do that right? Did I do everything I could have to really seal this thing? Oh my God, I feel like I need to go back in there and fix it. Right?
Yes, yeah. That 100% would be nervous on. My, like, that's childhood right there, though, for you. That was just like, listen, I don't want to fuck this up.
Yeah.
The one I had that really scared the shit, because I used to work in the military for a couple years, and all that jazz, and huge respect for him and stuff like that, was they sent her like, hey, we're interested in you, we want you to audition for this. It was to be the voice for the next, like, 2 years for all the U.S. Navy commercials.
Oh, my God.
And so I was like, ooh! Like, oh,
yeah, that's huge.
God. It's like, because if you don't want to fuck that up, because one, it feels like this is such disrespect thing if you do, and it's like, oh, needless to say, I didn't get it, but.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, well, when I auditioned for Rocket at Guardians, I had no idea what I was going in for. They just said, Marvel wants to audition you. Okay, so I went into a studio, which again was unusual, okay. Yeah. And I go in, and the first thing I do is sign this NDA, and then they give me this sealed brown envelope, and I open up the envelope, and it's sides of all the characters from Guardians of the Galaxy, and one of them, of course, is Rocket. And I'm looking at this, and the description is very minimal. It's like, he's a raccoon, he's got big guns, he's angry. But what it specifically said was, this character has been played before by Billy West, Seth Green, and I think, who else played him? There was another name on there, too. But I'm looking at this list of characters who have already played this character, and I'm looking at this going, uh-oh, how am I supposed to follow Billy fucking West?
It's true. And it's like, and Seth Green, you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, how am I supposed to follow Seth Green, who is not only wildly hilarious, but the creator of some of the best animated shows I've ever seen, Robot Chicken.
Yes,
West, don't even get me started on him. And how am I, who, they know I'm just some guy, right? Like, I'm not, so that was freaky, because I was like, oh my God, I have to follow these two? Oh my, okay, all right. Now, luckily, I didn't know who the character was. I didn't know what the show was. I know nothing about it. So I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to do whatever I do and go with my first instinct. And luckily, that was the one they chose. But that was nerve-wracking, for sure.
That had to be. Was this, like, before or after the first or second movie came out?
It was before the first movie came out.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
So you definitely had no idea.
None. In fact, it was before the first trailer for the movie came out.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, okay. So, and I didn't know who Guardians of the Galaxy were. No idea. I'm, you know, not a comic book guy, right? So I do this audition. I fly back home to Vancouver to do some work. My friend Sam Vincent, another big voice guy, he pulls up his laptop. He's like, have you seen this? He shows me the trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm like, that's really familiar for some reason. Oh, my, wait a minute.
Oh, shit.
Bradley Cooper is playing this character. Oh, my God. Oh, great. Billy West, Seth Green, and Bradley motherfucking Cooper. That's great.
Yeah, you're like, oh, fuck. Like, what's going to happen? Oh, they're never going to remember my name.
Yeah, and then literally the next day I get a phone call. Okay, you're the guy. What? I was at a My Little Pony session. I'll never forget it. Really? And I get a phone call in the middle of session. And it's my agent. I'm like, guys, I gotta take this. So, which you never do. You're never supposed to do that. But,
No.
It wasn't my scene, but I was like, I'm just gonna step out here for a second. And I take, and she says, okay, well, you're Rocket Raccoon. I was like, what? She says, yeah, you're Rocket Raccoon. So they're gonna want to start recording. I'm like, I got it. Yeah. They're gonna record starting next week, and I was like, oh, okay. But it didn't sink in, and then I had to run back in and do, you know, My Little Pony. So I run in there and I do my scene, and my friend Peter knew. He's watching me as this is all happening, and he says, "So what just happened there?" I said, "I think something real big just happened." And sure enough, it was, because that job not only launched my career here in L.A. largely, but also launched my writing career here in L.A. as well.
As it would.
So, yeah.
Talk about your writing, because I'm curious about that. Is like, what do you write for? What do you do with that and whatnot? Because we talked a whole shit ton of voice acting, but like,
yeah. So this is one of my favorite L.A. stories, actually. So what happened was, and this is, when I tell this story to a room full of writers, they want to punch me in the face. So
fair enough.
So what happened was, we were going into second season of Guardians, and I was having dinner with Will Friedle one night, and I had an idea for an episode that I wanted to see, which I thought would be super cool. And the episode was entirely based around Groot. The whole concept was, we start the episode with well, it doesn't matter what the details are, but basically the idea was that the entire episode's through Groot's perspective. So we hear his internal thoughts, and he turns out to be this super erudite, very well-spoken person, and he only hears everyone else as they say, like, when Rocket speaks, all he hears is, I am Rocket. When Star-Lord speaks, all he hears is, I am Star-Lord. So he hears what everyone else hears when he speaks, but we're seeing the entire show through his perspective.
Brilliant.
So, and then the plot was sort of based around the fact that he needed to communicate with his friends and family on this ship, right? Yeah. So Will's like, oh, that's a really neat idea. You should pitch Marvel. And I'm like, yeah. And he says, no, really, you should pitch them. And I'm like, why would they listen to me? And he says, you're Rocket Raccoon. They're not just going to say no. And I went, oh, my God, you're right. So I went to session the next Tuesday. We recorded on Tuesdays. And I went up to Harrison Wilcox, who's the supervising producer of the show. At the time, I didn't know he was the supervising producer of the show. I knew he had something to do with the show, but I didn't know exactly what he did. So he happened to be the first guy I saw when I walked in the studio. And I said, hey, man, hey, listen, I got this idea for an episode. Who would I talk to about that? And he says, well, that'd be me. And I said, oh, great. Well, he said, let's talk about it today after the show. Okay. So I do the record and promptly forget and go home. La, 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 la. So 2 weeks later, we come back to do another episode. And Harrison says, hey, man, I missed you last week. You want to get together after the record today? We'll talk about this idea of yours. I'm like, yeah, for sure. Definitely, man. I think you're going to dig this. So we do the record. We finish. I totally forget. I go home. La, 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 la. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, he's like, so did you want to tell me this idea? Or I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I forgot because actor brain. So this goes on for like months.
Oh,
where
shit.
Now I'm going to tell him that, but now he's out of town, and then I'm out of town, and then he's sick. And so finally, at Christmas time, we finally get together. We sit down for lunch, and he says, well, this better be a doozy. So I tell him the idea, and he goes, wow, that's really great, and it really fits in with our third season arc that we're planning right now. Do you want to write it? And I went, write it? I just kind of want to watch it.
Yeah. You're like, oh, wait a minute.
See it. And he says, no, I think you should write it. And I'm like, okay. He says, you've written before. I said, yeah, I've never written this kind of stuff, but yeah, I guess I could. And he said, okay, great. Well, before we throw you into the Guardians pool, why don't we start you out with like an Avengers episode? You want to write an Avengers episode to start? I'm like, okay. So next thing I know, I'm getting a phone call from Eugene, the son, who's the story editor for Avengers Assemble. And he's like, hey, so I hear you're going to be writing an episode for us. Okay, I'm going to send you the specs. I'm going to send you the beat sheet for it, and you can do an outline. I'm like, okay. Now, I had never watched Avengers Assemble. I had no idea who these characters were. I mean, yeah, I knew who Iron Man was and Thor because I see movies. So I wasn't born in a barn, in a cave. But I didn't understand the show's dynamic, the animated show's dynamic. I didn't understand what their relationships were at all. So I was like, oh, fuck, I have no idea what to do here. But luckily, they sent me a beat sheet. And a beat sheet is literally just a point form document that explains the plot of the show. This is what happens in this episode, which they had done before in a writer's room. Okay. So they had done the hard work for me. They just said, here's what happens. Now make it work. So I was like, wait a minute. So I don't even have to come up with a story. I just have to put action sequences and dialogue in this. Are you kidding? I can do it in my sleep. So I did that. No problem. Send it to them. They're like, yeah, great. That's awesome. You want to do another one? Okay. So I did another one. Hey, I screw you. Want to do another one? Oh, and that's how it happened. Next thing I know, they're like, okay, the Guardians idea you had. We want to incorporate it into our show in an arc called the Black Vortex, which is where all the Guardians go into these different sort of animated worlds because they go into this mirror, and every time we see what's happening to them, it's a totally different animation style. So we want to do your Groot idea. And I'm like, awesome. So I actually got to write a version of that and then see it on screen on television a couple years later, and that was huge. So the point of this is that all I did was say, hey man, I got this idea, do you want to hear it? And that lesson has changed my career. It has changed my life in this city, because in this city, if you go up to somebody, if you obviously have to be a competent professional, blah 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 blah. Yeah. But if you go up to a producer and say, hey, you got 10 minutes? Can I buy you lunch? You want to tell you about a thing? They go, sure. And you sit down and you have the conversation. I can't tell you, that would never happen in Canada, in a million years. Never, never, never. If I'm on a show in Canada, in Vancouver, and I have an idea for an episode, oh well, because there's nobody up there I can talk to. They're just line producers. They're just like, they're the Canadian producers. They don't actually call the shots. They don't actually decide. I mean, there are some Canadian-based shows that do, but that's pretty rare. I'm talking about like the higher profile American shows. For example, if I had had an idea for a My Little Pony episode back in its heyday, I wouldn't have been able to know who to talk to make that happen. I had no access to them. But here, I have access to everybody that makes the decisions, and that has changed the game for me. 100%. It's amazing.
Yeah, like, that's... And it's not like you're going up there as, like, a PA or, like, someone who's just, like, getting the coffee or some shit like that. It's like, you know what you're talking about, and you're right. You gotta have that professional matter. Well, no, I gotta say, that is an amazing fucking story.
Yeah, and this, like, is the reason, like I said, when writers hate me, because they're like, hold on, I've been in L.A. for 15 years knocking on that Marvel door my whole life, and you just waltz up and ask, and they give you... Now, I was on the show as Rocket, so that was a bit of an in.
It's like, listen, know? I'm a Guardians of the Galaxy, okay? It's like, you gotta work to get that, and then you can get in, apparently. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, but that said, I mean, I was talking with Katie, who's one of the producers on the show, and she told me, this is long, long after I had written a bunch of scripts, she said to me, you know, Harrison doesn't do that for just everybody.
Ooh.
I was like, oh, really? She said, no. He, like, your idea was what sold that. It wasn't the fact that you were Rocket. The fact that you were Rocket got you the meeting, but it was the idea that sold. So that's the thing I have to focus on here, is that my connection with the show only got me in the door to have the meeting. It was the quality of the idea. So, you know, in your example, you're not just some lowly PA. I kind of disagree with that. Some lowly PA is already associated with the show. He's already on the show.
That's true.
He has far far more access than anyone else does who is not on the show. So if that lowly PA has a kick-ass idea for an episode or whatever it is, it's way easier for him to get access to the person who makes the decision than anybody else. At that point, it's the quality of the idea, right?
Mm, it's true. Actually, you're right. You're 100% right on that. It does depend on... Hopefully the idea doesn't suck, because then if it does, you're like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got to have good ideas.
Yeah, yeah. Vet your idea before you go pitch it, folks. That's also one thing you should learn of. Like, make sure...
Yeah.
Tell someone your idea in secret, or two people that aren't your best friends who are going to blow you on it. They're going to be, oh, this sucks. Yeah. Or this
right,
is good.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that comes down to what we were talking about before. You have to be good. And you have to be honest with yourself. Mm. You have to, and I would say this to people who are trying to get involved in the voice world, and especially people who are thinking about moving to the gigantic market of Los Angeles. You have to be honest with yourself. Do I have what it takes to actually contribute to this industry? Do I have something that is of value, right? Am I talented? Am I skilled? I had a guy who he runs a gym that I go to. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, he knows I'm a voice guy. And he came up to me one day and he asked the dreaded question. He said, so, yeah, listen, Trev, I was thinking about getting into the voice world. And I'm like, okay, here we go. He said, so, you know, I mean, like, is there any sort of tips? And I said, yeah, I've got a tip for you. And I just heard this. I forget who told me this. But I repeated it. I said, here's what you need to do. You need to be honest with yourself. You need to ask yourself, are you any good? Mm. And he said, well, I don't know. And I said, well, okay, that's good. That's an honest response. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to find a microphone somewhere. It doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to go to some studio. Just it could be your iPhone. Doesn't matter. Go into a fairly quiet room. And I want you to record any given 5 pages of War and Peace. And I want you to read and basically perform any given pages, any 5 sequential pages of War and Peace into the iPhone, and then I want you to listen back. And if you haven't put yourself to sleep by the end of the 3rd page, then you have something. Otherwise, ooh, this isn't for you.
Whoa. That's
and
damn good.
And his face fell. Because that's not what he wanted to hear. What he wanted to hear was, oh, yeah, no, I'm running this workshop, man. Come and take it, and I'll show you how to be a big VO guy. But that's horseshit.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. You got to be honest with yourself. Are you good enough to work? Well, you got to find out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's – I don't want to sound like a dick, but the fact is if you want to work – if you want to fly with the Eagles, boy, you gotta spread them wings. So it's just that I'm bombarded all the time by people who really have a passion for doing this, but they have no skill and they've never even tested themselves. And it's like, wait a minute, you want to move to L.A. and you don't even know whether you've got something to offer? That's a little premature.
Yeah, you have to. Like, you have to be working at least a year or two, at least. And know what you are, know what you're capable of, and know what you really, really want to do, because if not, you're fucked.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it, like, there's just two, it was, what's his name? He was Darkness in Labyrinth way back in. He was, Tim Curry.
Yes.
Tim Curry once said, in an interview, I think, he said, you only come to L.A. when you're invited. Ooh. And I didn't know what that meant for a long time. But now I do. Now I know what that means. What that means is you have to already be ready to contribute to the marketplace here. If you come fresh off the bus from, you know, some small town, Iowa, because you've done a 12th grade play and your drama teacher told you that you're pretty enough to be a star. Yes, those people do make it sometimes. They absolutely do. But that's not the working actor. The working actor is someone who comes to town with a goal, but also with a plan and with an agenda and with the drive, as we talked about before. But they come here understanding they have an honest assessment of their abilities. They know where they can contribute and where they're not going to be able to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, if you're honest with yourself, yes, I am good enough to work at this level, then great. But if you don't know, if you're not sure, you got to find out first. You got to find out first. I would say you have to go to a much lower risk environment. You know, do a bunch of non-union voice stuff. I mean, there's those websites, right? Voices.com or whatever, 123, whatever they are, where you can do these little kind of jobs if you're non-union. Do it for experience. Do it for the experience of learning how to audition, of learning what your capabilities are. Do it to stretch your own abilities and to push your own envelope to see, you know, what your range is. Find your range. Understand what you're capable of before you dive into the deep end, man. Yeah. You know?
You have to. This has been a really big advice episode for people in the film business.
I guess so, yeah.
Holy shit. Like, a lot of this stuff.
I sound like an old man here. I didn't really intend for this to be, you know, well, gather around the fire, children. I'll tell you how to make it in a big old world.
Trust me, you don't sound like an old man. There's a lot of advice I've learned in the past couple of years of working in the film business and creative world. And, like, this helps out a lot for people who, like I said before, like, there's plenty of people in the business, that are in the business that work in Vancouver. Actually, a big amount of the people there. And, like, work in L.A. and New York and stuff like that for Marvel, D.C. or whatever. And it's like, and some people were just trying to get there. And I think this episode, you never know, could save somebody's life. Or it could be like, hey, okay, I'm going to dial it back a notch. Do more and whatnot. So it could save a lot of people with this, man. Like, Trevor, it's really good. Yeah, we talked about Rocket. But I think, really, this episode is very, very helpful, I think. And, like, you're the godfather of advice right now.
Well, I mean, this is just stuff that, you know, has been this is stuff I've learned through many, many years of experience. It's stuff I've also seen fellow colleagues, you know, it's the same kind of advice that they give. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to sound harsh. I'm not trying to burst anybody's bubble have to. You know, if you really do believe and you have some sort of evidence to back it up that you can be a working actor in an environment like this, then by all means do it. But that's what that means. Like, a working actor means that you're probably not going to be famous. You're probably not going to be crazy rich. But you're going to work. And that's the thing that's my goal. You know, you ask me what drives me every day. What drives me is to be able to continue contributing to shows that I think are quality. You know what is a huge show for me, a massive, massive, massive win for me, was F is for Family.
Yes.
Bill Burr's F is for Family. Because when I booked that show, Michael Price of Lego Star Wars basically came to me and said, I need you for the show. So I wind up playing 8, 10, 12 characters on that show. None of those characters are main characters. And none of those characters are top build characters. But I am, like, me and basically two other actors are everybody else in the show who's not a main character. And for me, that's a massive win. Because one of the biggest goals I had, one of my personal big goals by moving to LA, remember I said that I wanted to be involved in high-profile stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of my big goals was I want to be a utility guy on a hilarious adult animated show. And it was like, oh, those clouds opened, and I was given this gift. There you go. Here's a hilarious adult animated show, and they want you to be utility on it. Wow. But most people, like, if I tell you the names of my characters, unless you're a big F is for Family guy, you're probably not going to know who those people are, you know? But that's okay, because I know. I know that I'm a huge part of that show, and I'm so appreciative of being able to do that. But I don't need, like, the fame of, oh, yes, you're the lead on this big – no, that's irrelevant to me. I want to be a working actor. I want to be in there in the trenches. I want to be contributing to these shows. I want to be able to say, yeah, I'm on that show. I did, you know, 7 scenes in that show, and I got slipped in this great joke or this ad lib or whatever. I helped the writers realize the hilarious scene, blah, 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 whatever. I'm so grateful for that. Working actor means that you're there to do the work. Yeah. You're there to what's next? You finish the job, great. What's next? What's the next thing? What's the next thing we can do? What's the next bit we can? Yes, being leads. Yes, of course. It's great. And yes, especially if you get, you know, like a lead role in a giant video game or something. Yeah, that's going to be great, cuz you're going to be doing the convention circuits and people are going to be wanting your autograph all the time, and that's all great. But honestly, the goal for me is always about what's tomorrow? What's tomorrow's schedule? What's the next thing? What's the next thing I can be on? What's the next thing I can contribute to? So when I get a call saying you booked this job, it doesn't matter what the job is. All that I hear is, yeah, I get to contribute to this new thing. Great. Great. What's next? You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. Like, that's very beautiful. And two, I relate so much to that. Like, that's exactly, I feel so much on that. Like, Trevor, you have no idea. Because that's what I tell people all the damn time is, because everyone's like, oh, you want to be famous. You want to make money. It's like, no, I know I'm never going to be famous. I know I'm never going to make money. But the biggest thing is I get to create. And I get to create a character, or I get to create a script, or I get to create a comic, or create a scene when I'm doing filming. You know, so, like, the biggest thing for me is, with that is, you get to create, and that's what matters to me. So I relate 100% on that shit. Like, part of you, man, because I don't often hear it that much. People are like, oh, I do it for this reason here. It's like, oh, this one special reason. But, like, that is, like, the most ultimate reason to do what we do, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, I'm aware that I'm one of a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of a percent of actors that can make a very good living doing what we do. Like, mm-hmm. I'm aware of that. I'm aware that my story is not the common one. I'm aware that most working actors are struggling. That is the fact. And I think the statistics are, at any given time, 95% of a union's actors, like SAG-AFTRA or UBCP back home, mm-hmm. at any given time, 95% of that population is out of work. But of the 5% that is working, fully 2% are all voice people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good, that sounds pretty accurate.
I mean, I'm just pulling those numbers out of my ass, but you know, I mean,
I could believe
it. It's like, I'm very aware and grateful of the fact that I'm part of a tiny little group that is constantly working.
Yeah.
That's not the usual thing. But it's about the love of the game, man. I've been singing that song for as long as I've been doing this. It's about the love of the game. As you say, it's about creating a character. It's about investing in a world that you create or whatever, that creative impulse.
Yes.
It's about being able to make that manifest and be rewarded for it, either financially or creatively or hopefully both, right?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And we're nearing the end of the show. We've been on for about an hour and 10 now, almost.
Oh my!
Yeah, no, we got lost, man. Time just flew by.
I hope you've all enjoyed this fireside advice chat.
Or now you sound like the ones who like get big time actors from like Game of Thrones now to do those calm videos or those calm audio things. I saw it was one guy in there who says, "Fuck, I want my fucking castle all the time from Game of Thrones," and he's like, "And you see the calmness in the wind, you feel
wind
in the
breeze."
I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah. He's great.
He's so wonderful. I'm like, that is...
I love him.
It's another side of the coin. That's just... that.
Have you seen the documentary that HBO released after the last episode of Game of Thrones? I loved it. I just loved it.
It's
but
so cool.
For all kinds of reasons.
Yeah.
But one of the things I loved the most was the actor whose name escapes me, who plays Jorah Mormont.
Yes.
You know, his speaking voice is nothing at all like Ser Jorah. Because, you know, Ser Jorah is very much down here when he talks. I don't know Khaleesi. He's very much like that. But, you listen to a Tory laugh. That is me. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, you're like, shit. Like, you're still really cool and still a hard-ass guy, but you're like, oh my God.
I just love that, you know? Because, you know, he's doing the interview. It's not me. Khaleesi, I don't think you should. Oh, that's so great.
I'm jealous of those guys who can pull off acting on camera and also voice acting on camera. Like, 100%. Like, applaud. Just applaud. All right, I gotta ask as we're nearing the end here, man, because I know you got work. We both got stuff we gotta do. And as we're nearing the end here, I gotta ask, like, give a shout out to stuff that you're doing. What can people check you out on, man, that's coming up or being released that NDAs have not blacked out yet?
Well, F is for Family is, I think we released 3 seasons. They're working on the 4th right now, so that's always great on Netflix.
It's a really good show. I love it.
Sure.
I actually really love
it. Yes, I'm very, very proud of that one. Also, Thundercats, I don't think is released yet, but it should be coming to Cartoon Network soon, very, very soon. So keep your eyes open for that one. I play, among others, Slythe, who's sort of the head of the bumbling mutants that the T-Cats are always fighting against. What else is going on right now that I can talk about? There's a couple of giant video games I'm part of that I obviously can't say anything because you know how it is with them.
yes, because if you say anything, like a Grim Reaper pops out and kills you, and you're like,
exactly. What else is going on right now that I can talk about? Those are the things that come to mind right now. So check out Efforts for Family for sure, and Thundercats when it comes out.
Cool. And where can people find you out on social media, man?
I guess I have a Twitter account, but I don't partake in the Twitter mob.
Yeah.
I kind of hate it, to tell you the truth. I hate the whole culture of entitlement that social media has bred. I think it's moronic, and I think people should just chill the fuck out and grow the fuck up. That'd be my dad. There you go. There's a big sales pitch for coming to find me on the Twitter. but if you insist on finding me on Twitter, it's at Trevor Duvall. I'm on Instagram as well. Occasionally, I put up a little picture. Sometimes a little picture, and that's at T Duvall. I'm on Facebook, but I don't talk to anybody on Facebook, so don't bother. Although, wait, what am I saying? I have a fan page. The Trevor Duvall fan page, which apparently people look at. I don't know. Can you tell that I don't really care?
Yeah.
Is that apparent?
I mean, I'm with you. If I didn't have to do it for business and everything like that, I wouldn't do it.
Me neither. The only reason why I got a Twitter account is because my guy said, "Oh, you gotta have a Twitter account." I was like, "What is a Twitter?" So I went on and I was like, oh, these are just a bunch of people attacking each other over nothing. To hell with this. I don't want no part of this.
I know. I poked the beast because I never had anything bad happen to me on Twitter, even with all the shit, like business stuff or acting, whatever it may be. And I'm like, you know what? Let's poke the beast on Twitter. You can follow me at DakotaMorgan3, by the way. But if you poke the beast on Twitter, I have to. It's the same day I had the agency. Everybody's like, you got to have it. Like, damn it. And I put on there, I was like, real fans wouldn't sign the Game of Thrones petition. Oh, my God.
Heresy. How dare you suggest that the culture of entitlement is not, you know, worthy of being listened to and respected. Why don't you fucking people go make your own show? You know, by the way, that's my response. I've been around Bill Burr too much lately. Why don't you fucking people go make your own fucking show, right? You know?
Yeah.
Because you fucking guys, and you complain, I don't like Kennedy Rose's shit. Fuck up. How about this? Go fuck yourself. How about this? Huh? You know?
Oh, that's perfect. That was my immediate inner self on that shit. Like, fuck you.
Billy. I got a chance to channel my buddy Bill. Thanks for that opportunity.
We all have an inner Billy, man. Let's be honest. We all do. Oh my God!
Yeah.
Oh, but some of us can't channel it as well as you. But still,
I did that at a table read once. We were doing a table read for one of the episodes, and there was some minor character that they gave me, and so I decided, I'm gonna play him like Bill. So you know, right? I'm playing the character like that. You know what I mean? Playing him, and he looks over at me, and he's looking at me. And after the table, he comes up and he says, "That was good. You killed it. It's always that Triff. That guy you were playing, who was that? You were doing somebody?" I was like, "Yeah, I was." Like, it sounded familiar. Okay, all right.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. That never happened.
Oh, okay.
he never actually said that to me. But I'd always love to do that. I think that would be awesome.
It's a really good impression. As a big fan, like, that's a pretty damn good impression. It's like, hey, you're here.
Can I just, I know we're supposed to close the show, but I want to say something about Bill Burr. Yeah, this guy's the most salt of the earth guy. This guy, let me give an example. First of all, he had never really been involved in animation before. So when he came in to watch, I think it was me and Debbie Derryberry and Kevin Michael Richardson, I think, we were all doing some scenes, and you know, we're jumping back and forth between characters, and he, because he's a producer of the show as well, he was like a kid at Christmas. He just couldn't believe that we could do all this stuff. He was like, where the fuck do you guys get this? How can you keep track? So he was so, it was so great for me to see that, because he was so, he was like a kid at Christmas. He was so overjoyed to see that. So that set my opinion of Bill Burr very early. I was like, I love this guy. He's, because he's so genuine, right? So then we were going into the, I think, second season of the show, and Netflix did a screening in Hollywood. And we were all there, and the president of Netflix was there, and he's pointing out people in the crowd before the screening. Oh, well, there's Kevin Michael Richardson. Good to see you. Oh, Debbie Homo Collins. Good to see you there. And he basically pointed out everybody except for me. So I was like, that's fine. No, that was fine. It was fine, because who am I, right? I'm not some TV celebrity. Who the fuck am I? Fair enough. No problem. But then, you know, we're watching the thing, and I'm like, it is kind of bugging me. I'm like, really? They didn't? That's all fine, whatever. So then, at the reception, Bill comes up, comes right to me, beelines to me. He's like, can you fucking believe that? He said everybody's name but you. Oh. What the fuck is that all about? I'm like, hey, man, I'm good with it. He's like, no, I'm not good. I'm not. I'll tell you what. I'm going to do, I'm doing Howard Stern and Rogan. Doing Rogan later this week, you know? I gotta make sure that they fucking hear you. And sure enough, he goes on Rogan and he's talking about the cast. He specifically mentions my, and that Trevor Duvall fucking guy. Love that guy. Great sense of humor. And I'm like, he didn't have to do that. But that guy, man of his word. Wow. Man of his fucking word. Went on there, dropped my name on those shows. I was like, what a guy. So my estimation that, I mean, I could tell you countless stories about why Bill Burr is a fucking rock star. But just as a guy, but my estimation of him just keeps going through the roof. He can do no wrong in my book, as far as I'm concerned. So there you go.
Damn, no, that's cool. Like, I never would have felt like Bill, like, wow. He really sounds like a really cool guy. It'd be one of those, like, hey, you want to go out to dinner sometime?
Yeah, he's a no-shit dude, too. You know what I mean? He's just, he's kind of exactly like he is in his act, except not yelling all the time.
He's not saying, put your fucking head through a wall.
Put your head through a fucking wall.
I mean, if he told me that, I'd be like, okay, I see what I did wrong.
No, he's great. He's awesome.
Oh, shit. All right. Well, Trevor, I got to say thanks for coming on. And
My pleasure.
Oh, and oh, shit, because I know the network will yell at me. At Dakota underscore Morgan 97 on Instagram. Don't want to get yelled at by the network.
There you go.
All right, man. Trevor, blast having you on, man. It's been informative and overall a good damn time. Like,
great.
Oh, and if you ever want to come back on promotion-wise or anything like that, or you want to shoot the shit, if you're ever in Phoenix, man, I'll buy you a drink if you drink. If not, dinner. I mean.
All right, you're on.
Damn. All right, Trevor, I'll let you go. And any final words, man, for anybody, everyone on the show?
Thanks for listening to all of my nonsense over these years. Keep doing it. And find me on Twitter.
I know. Oh, damn it. Alrighty. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And it really... Yeah. And tuning in. And stay classy, Guardians.